This is AEW Unrestricted. We're in Jacksonville on location. Super, super fucking hot Jacksonville. Are you sick of this place yet, Tommy?
F-bomb, it's 9 seconds into the show.
9 seconds, it's like a new record, right? Speaking of F-bomb.
Because she is the podcasting bitch.
Podcasting queen.
Oh, sorry.
First you call me a queen, then you call me a bitch.
This is Unrestricted, as you can tell from her language.
Tony, I love you.
I love you too.
Aw, that's so nice. Okay. Speaking of love, I just wanted to do a quick pitch over to AEW Heels. It's this new group, very female-focused community that we're building here. Super, super awesome. Membership-based. We've got awesome events, dance parties, makeup tutorials. Like, we have mental health discussions. Super, super great. Definitely check it out. AllEatHeels.com. Come hang out with us. It's super awesome. Anyway, back to the F-bombs. We're here to podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of F, we've got FTR in the house. What's up, guys?
Hey, how are you?
Thanks for that introduction. That was awesome.
I only swore like 5 times.
Well, it guys, it's great having you here.
Absolutely.
Needless to say, man, it just excited when I found out you were going to be coming here.
Ah, so bummed.
And I know from watching you in the past how great you guys are in the ring and how much you've meant to the tag team scene here in AEW. So it's just great being
you, Tony. I don't know. It's hard for me to take compliments from someone that I have respected and looked up to and watched my whole career.
Yeah.
But I appreciate that.
Yeah, not just saying it because we're here, but yesterday,
as a matter of fact, in the hall,
we passed you and said hello, and then we kept going. We just talked about how you're better now than you've ever been.
Yeah. I told you that a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I feel this way, and I hear that a lot of, you know, that Shivani, you're better than you've ever been. And here's the reason, because the talent, I'm happy, that's number one, but the talent is good. And I really think that the announcers are only as good as the talent in the ring. If the talent sucks, the announcers will try their best to elevate it,
right?
And then we'll end up sounding really phony.
Yeah, we can tell you believe in what you're selling.
Yeah,
You're not trying to sell snake oil, which
that's
is,
right.
You
right.
know, it shows through.
And you guys are a big part of that. And to be honest with you, I was not that familiar with what you guys were doing in the WWE until Arn Anderson said, these guys are tremendous. You need to, he said, and our North Carolina guys do. I said, well, that always works.
Yep.
Because that's the old Jim Crockett promotions territory. Mm-hmm.
I was so personally excited to have you guys here because, like, I think I've told you after the match we had a private party, but, like, I personally hated reffing tag team wrestling, especially on the indies because it's completely chaotic and mm-hmm. they just do whatever, right? So I was like, oh, dude, FTR's here. I'm going to learn so much because the first time I ever saw you guys live was versus Angle and Jordan in Dallas.
Not Angle.
Baby Angle.
Yeah, that's the one.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were there.
Yeah, I was totally there. It was a crazy, incredible match. But I'm like, oh my God. Like, I was intimidated. I'm like, these guys are really good. I'm going to suck.
Well,
but it's awesome. I feel like I've already learned so much.
We appreciate that. I think, like, a lot of the guys that we're working with now, and I think there's some of them that still have a little bit of apprehension
mm-hmm.
towards us. Because I think that they think, oh, here are these old WWE guys coming in. They're going to change. They're going to try to change the culture. And that's not the case at all.
No, push it.
Not negatively.
Yeah. The gimmick is FTR, follow the rules and things like that. And it is part of our gimmick. But in real life, we believe that. We really do believe that because it's easy for you to go out there. And a lot of guys think it's creative to get 4 guys in the ring or 6 guys in the ring or 8 guys in the ring and do a whole bunch of stuff. And they think that's the creative part. But to us, the creative part is having boundaries and having rules and working in those rules so the fans can follow it. Because if Michael Jordan steps out of bounds, or I guess now if LeBron James steps out of bounds, people would say, oh, the whistle blew because he stepped out of bounds. Same thing with us. If we didn't hold the tag rope and make a tag, Aubrey Edwards steps in and says no, you know, and people can say, oh, well, that's because of this.
Sure.
So it's just part of the storytelling aspect for us.
Yeah, right. we need everybody to play their role.
Right.
And like I said, people think it's creative to get 4 guys involved without it making sense, but it's not. The creativity is making it make sense or finding ways around the rules with the distraction with the referee. But
mm-hmm. that's when you know you're
it's good. Not just about us, and it's not just about us getting our stuff in. We have a whole group of people out there that have a job to do, and it's our job and our responsibility to make sure that they can do theirs effectively. We got to give you authority.
Mm-hmm.
We got to make sure people respect the referee, because mm-hmm. if it's UFC, if you touch a referee or you disrespect the referee,
yeah.
then you pay
get
for
the fuck
that.
Out. Yeah, you actually pay for it, right? It's a fine.
We have we have Tony who has to tell our story for us.
Jericho owes me so much money. Jesus Christ!
So Tony has to tell our story for us, and if we're making his job impossible to do, then it's not going to come across well, and nobody's going to be able to follow it. So we have to do our part, so you can do your part, so he can do his part.
Right.
It's a group effort, and if we're in it just for ourselves, then nobody wins.
Right. In all my years in wrestling, I learned a lot from really two people, believe it or not. One was Bill Watts, and Bill Watts could be a very difficult person, but he taught me a lot about wrestling. Another was Ole Anderson, and Ole was a booker for
two
WCW.
Badasses.
Yeah, but I know. Ole was a booker for WCW, we're talking about the early 90s, and he used to say, he used to get so mad at guys, he says, if you're going to cheat, if you're going to do something that it's illegal, make sure the referee's back is turned.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're a heel.
Right.
Okay, and you would try to, you know, get around the referee. And so
if the ref sees us cheating and we get disqualified,
right,
in wrestling psychology, we lose, which means we get less money.
Right.
And also, like, going off of exactly what you just said, the fans today, they are smart, obviously. Smart to the business, and they get it, and they understand. So they're never gonna hate us. They're never gonna hate us as heels.
Right.
But we can make them feel a certain way and get lost in the movie, get lost in the and the portrait we're trying to paint, and make them care so much about these baby faces,
right,
feel a certain way about these baby faces, that they want to see these baby faces beat us.
Right.
And that's where the money is the baby faces beating us.
Sure.
So exactly what you said, if we can get the fans to say, oh, why do they have to do that? Or they don't have to do that,
right,
or whatever, you know,
right,
and they care so much, and even subconsciously care so much about these baby faces,
mm-hmm,
they want to see them beat us because they care about it.
And if we cheat in front of the referee, if Aubrey sees us cheat, the heat's not on us anymore.
It's on me.
The heat's on the referee for not doing a good job.
Exactly.
So then it's all null and void. Like, we don't get the heat that we should be getting for breaking the rules. The referee gets heat for not doing their jobs correctly, and the baby faces get nothing out of it. They, like, the attention is drawn away from them now, and everything's directed at the referee. So if you're going to do it right, so everybody comes out looking better than before.
Where did you guys get this psychology from?
Yeah.
Just all the years watching wrestling?
I think so. I think it just subconsciously happened.
Right.
I don't know. I would watch things, and sometimes I had this notebook, and I would write down, because we would get made in North Carolina, even in 2010,
yeah,
we would get made fun of by Ricky Morton or by Bobby Eaton or Dennis Condrey or George South.
Mm-hmm.
We'd get made fun of if they saw us calling our match in the back. So
mm-hmm,
I always had a notebook, and I would watch Flair and Steamboat.
Mm-hmm.
They would do tackle, drop down, leapfrog, baseball slide, takeoff, body slam, kickoff, arm drag, and I would write that spot down, and I would think to myself, how can I call that in a match? You know, in the best way.
In the ring.
Yes, in the ring.
Right.
And so I would think, okay, tackle, drop down, whatever. And then I would look through them, and then I'd say, I think it was honestly the first time I got like psychology and understood what it was. I was watching Brett versus Bulldog from SummerSlam 92 for the 100th time. And and
I'm actually impressed the number's so low.
Yeah, the first time Bulldog gave Brett a crucifix pin, 1-2, kick out, and then gave him an arm drag and a hold. And then through the heat, he started to come up a little bit. He took off. Brett went for the clothesline again. Bulldog hooked him for the crucifix again, and Brett dropped him with a Samoan drop. And the light went off in my head, and I was like, that's the simple form. That's wrestling psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I just try to – that's kind of where I got it from.
Sure.
Just being a nerd, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, right.
We were lucky to be in the Carolinas, where there are the guys he's named that have been around for 20-plus years,
yeah,
that cared enough to take the time to tell us if we did something wrong,
right,
or if we were to have a match with them, they could explain something to us, like, oh, no, we can't do that here. I'm like, oh, wow. Like, you have these epiphanies. Like, it was just show after show, being lucky enough to work with guys who
were smarter than you.
Yeah, mm-hmm, smarter than us, better than us, and had been trained the right way in a time period where the fans did believe, and
mm-hmm,
they knew how to pull the strings just the right way, the right time to get the right reactions.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm from Virginia, so I grew up watching, long before you guys, Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, and being able to work with Flair and Blackjack Mulligan and Wahoo and Arn, and, well, not Arn, because I started working with him, but but Ole Anderson. And I was amazed about the talent back then, because here's how they set up their matches. In a house show, heels were in one dressing room, babyface in the other, and the referee ran between them, and that's how they worked their match.
I think
they knew the finish, and they went in and they did a match. Mm-hmm. You know, it was amazing.
That's insane. I think
it was amazing.
One of the things that made it so different then as opposed to now is that there were no guaranteed contracts. So if you weren't doing your job correctly and the fans weren't buying into what you were selling, and there weren't butts in seats,
yep,
then you didn't get paid. You got paid off the house, and if you guys were doing something right and the story was hot, mm-hmm, fans were paying to come see you. And if you were doing something piss poor, the fans weren't going to come by, and that was affecting your bottom dollar. So I think these guys figured out how to make the fans care about their baby faces, hate their heels, respect the authorities, and that was what made the business what it was at that time.
That's absolutely insane.
Now, let's talk about you guys. How hard was it, difficult was it to keep it a secret that you were signing with AEW?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we saw, and being the Elite, we kept seeing FTR,
maybe
FTR.
Fucked the Revival multiple times.
Yeah, but
kind of knew this was inevitable. But
sometimes what you hear and see on Being the Elite doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. For us, I think it was fairly easy because there wasn't any leaks in the office.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Putting something out there every time there was a disagreement or a contract offer turned down or something along those lines.
Right.
Because we can be as tight-lipped as we need to be, especially when it's something that's going to affect us.
Yeah, respecting the business.
Yeah.
Right.
And everyone's bottom line, right? Like,
exactly.
You guys being on our show brings new fans. We all make more money.
Yeah, there's nothing in it for us to spoil our own surprise.
No.
So
that's why spoilers are bad, so don't spoil shows.
I know my mom was very upset with me.
You didn't tell her?
No.
What? That's awesome.
You didn't tell
her. My wife was the only one that knew. I didn't tell anybody.
Wow, that's like, tremendous.
That's how it should be, though, because there aren't many surprises left in wrestling.
No.
Not, and like people like assumed, because there was like the history with us and the Bucks, and there was the FTR stuff on BTE, plus no one really had any idea, and we weren't 100% sure until we were, 100% sure.
Still inks on paper, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So talk about the rebranding of the tag team name.
I think it was something we thought about for a very long time.
Really?
Yeah. In January of 2019, that was the beginning of us asking for our release.
Mm-hmm.
We had just come back from a match. We had asked to speak with Vince. Mm-hmm. TVs is a very busy day.
Oh, yeah.
So he kept putting it off and putting it off. And finally, we had a match on Raw. And we came back sweaty in our trunks. And we walked right through the curtain, walked right up to Vince and Hunter, and said, "Can we talk to you guys for 5 minutes?" Vince couldn't leave because he was, producing a show, a television show. Hunter said, "I'll be there in 5 minutes." So we waited outside. He comes and talks to us, and we asked, we politely asked for our release. Initially, I think he thought we were bluffing.
Yeah.
He said, "Yeah, okay, well, you can have it. Go talk to Mark Carano. We'll get everything set up." Mm. So we did that. The next day, we got a phone call that said it's not happening. So anyway, what I'm getting at is, from January 2019, we had an idea of what we wanted to do. I had already. I'm always thinking about wrestling. It's almost. Yeah, it's almost.
Almost.
It's almost disgusting how much I think about it and how much I care about it and how much I love it. So I had set. I would sit at my kitchen table and I had my laptop and I would write up ideas. For us and how we would, at the time there was no AEW,
mm-hmm.
There were talks of it, but there was no AEW, but how we would transition from Monday Night Raw to either the Indies or whatever was next.
Mm-hmm.
I had so many ideas, so I'd always thought about it.
Before AEW was announced, they announced it at midnight on January 1st, we had already applied for the FTR trademark because we knew that we weren't going to be able to have the Revival, we knew we wouldn't be able to have Dash and Dawson and all that stuff.
Right.
And we had talked about it. Like, we had tons of 5-hour car rides going from show to show. We're like, what do we do? Like, do we use FTR as the name if we ask for a release? And because we weren't sure at this point. This was probably November, December.
2018.
Yeah. And so we went ahead and filed the trademark because we decided, like, I think that's the way to go because we can have different acronyms for different things. And there's a lot of different ways we can run with that. And it's creative and gives us leeway. So we filed for that, and then AEW was announced and we're like, oh, we're not getting out of here.
They're going to keep you in.
We asked anyway. Because we didn't know what we wanted to do. We just knew we wanted to go out and bet on ourselves.
Right.
But as soon as we heard that was announced, we're like, oh, yeah, they're not letting anybody go anytime soon.
Sure.
We asked anyway. Like I said, they initially said yes. Then there was a change of heart and it was another 15 months before.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, boy. Well, we were very persistent, though. We asked once a month, maybe. We tried to get producers and writers to fight us.
We would
get on the mic when we were going over our stuff, and we would like. I remember one time I was going over this promo, and I had the mic, and we were cutting it for everyone, you know, to do a run through or whatever. And Hunter's standing there, and Michael Hayes is there, and Johnny Ace is there. I'm surprised he wasn't on Vince, but he was actually there.
Yeah, I will say that's kind of a stooge patrol.
Yeah, right. So I'm standing there and cutting my promo, and the promo that they wrote for us and the angle that we were going into was so bad. And I finished and I said, who in the fuck wrote this? Martin Scorsese? And I put the mic down, and then we got called to the office with Bruce Pritchard.
Oh, of course.
And Triple H.
I remember sitting catering one day with one of the guys who was going to be on TV that night. I won't say his name, but he's one of our good friends. And it was just the two of us at this table. We're both eating. And this writer, like he's the guy is to my right. Mm-hmm. The writer walks up on my left, reaches over me and my food to shake the other guy's hand and doesn't acknowledge me at all.
Wow.
And I was just I was already not in a great mood.
Yeah.
And I just lost my shit.
Yeah.
Like, I said, don't you ever reach over somebody in any setting.
It's just disrespectful.
Over their food, over them, ignore like the fact they're even there. And have a conversation with somebody who's already in mid conversation.
Yeah,
you can come in and say, hey, sorry, carry on.
Yeah.
But don't ever disrespect somebody like that.
Yeah,
because I'm not gonna put up with that shit. And I was like, I gotta get out of here. I'm gonna kill somebody soon.
Yeah. Well, we're really glad you got out of there.
Yes.
Are we ever? We're talking with FTR, and I want to talk about the early days of you guys being together. When we continue on Unrestricted. This is AEW Unrestricted. You can subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts so that you never miss an episode. And why would you want to miss anything that Aubrey Edwards is on?
I dropped so many F-bombs.
You sure do. Okay, and that's one of the reasons, many reasons I love you. HR. Please leave us a rating. Boy, thanks for bringing up that name, Max, and ruining my freaking day. Please leave us a rating and review while you're there. We've got FTR here with us. Both wrestled in North Carolina in the indie scene. Talk about the early days of being together.
Well, actually, on the indies, we really didn't work together very much.
Really?
I was on the coast. He was in the mountains. We knew of each other, and you know, we exchanged pleasantries, but we didn't. We never really worked together. We met. We were at a WWE trial together. We had a match. We called it in the ring.
Yeah.
They let us go for. They just told us to keep going and keep going. We just kept going. Had an incredible match. I got signed from there, and he went to England. And that's kind of where our friendship formed.
That's awesome.
That was maybe, I don't know, 10 years ago or something.
That's when we really started discussing the idea of being a tag team. Like, we were aware of each other, and we had, like, interactions here and there. But that was one of the first times we'd spent a lot of time together.
And we traveled together.
Yeah, we traveled together. We got to talk and we realized how much we really had in common about like our vision of wrestling.
Yeah.
And like you said, we had the match that day and everybody else ended up having like 4-minute matches and they just kept let us. Scott Armstrong was our referee. And he's like, I want you guys to keep going. Just keep
working.
Keep going.
Just keep working.
Yeah. Ended up being like a decent amount of time. We got done and we're like, wow, that was fun. And
anything more than 4 minutes in a tryout setting is kind of insane.
Yeah.
Like anything more than 4 minutes on TV is insane. Like,
Regal was one of these guys who had helped me a lot before that. Like he had just gotten me like booked on a tour of England for the first time. So they came up to us and talked to us about doing like come to get signed. And Regal was like, I want him to go to Florida and I want him to go to England and get some more international experience. So I did a little bit more internationally and then we met up down there. We communicated off and on for a few years until I got there, and we had like a premise of what we wanted to do, and luckily they were on board from the get-go.
So I think you guys have said previously on other interviews and whatnot, Dusty was really pushing for you two to be together.
Yeah.
What's it like to kind of come in full circle now? Like, it's wild, right?
Yeah,
I guess cool. The roads has been, well, I don't know if I can say that.
Yeah. No, well, talk about your relationship with Dusty and talk about the first time you met him.
Yeah.
Well, I met him in 2012, and I think he saw this 5'10" North Carolina guy walk in, and you know, he didn't see much in him, obviously, and I, you know, I don't blame him. I don't blame anybody because you know, I'm nothing special. Until the damn bell rings, and then
you're special,
and then I'm special.
Boom.
But he saw that. So we had a relationship, and also I think he liked the fact that I was the antithesis of what Vince liked, from body stature to height to my southern accent. I think he really liked that. So we formed a bond very quickly, and you know, I'd always ask him questions and talk about the Mid-Atlantic stuff. But then he saw us together. We cut a promo together. He saw us together, and then he told us, "Don't ever leave each other's side. Oh. Always be together." You know, so everyone sees you together, and they can put it in their own mind that we need to have them together. Mm-hmm. Then we had matches, and he would always call us in his office, and we'd hang out and talk about Willie Nelson. And I remember 2 days before he passed away, I was in the trainer's room with Sami Zayn, and he walked from the office into the trainer's room, and he had just watched a match with me and I want to say this guy named Wesley Blake. We just had a singles match for some reason. I don't know why you and I weren't tagging, but we had a singles match. Maybe you weren't. No,
I think I was out with my elbow. Maybe,
yeah. Anyway, so we had this match, and he walks in, and he said, "I want everybody to know this," and my name was not Dax then.
Yeah.
But he said, "This guy right here is the best talent this company has. There's nobody else who can have the match that I just watched that he had, and he could work with anybody in this building. He deserves to be a millionaire." And he said it right in front of Sami Zayn. And that was one of my proudest moments as a professional wrestler. And then 2 days later, he passed away. That sucked. But I always have that memory of him putting me over. So
that's tremendous. So I'm sure you learned a lot from him about, I mean, he was one of the greatest promos ever.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was real. It was authentic. He believed it. He brought you in. And I'm sure you learned a lot doing promos from him. Right? Yeah. I mean, didn't he run promo school?
Yeah, I was just about to say it was never the same after he passed, obviously. Like, he's one of those guys that no matter who you bring in, he's going to be very hard to replace because he's not just a good promo, but he's a great mind and he's a great person and he wanted everybody to succeed. Like, and that's a combination you're not going to find very much of, no matter how good of a talker you bring in to sit in the seat that he sat in. Like, just his view and his way of coaching his kids, as he called them, he coaches to bring the best out of them. And like, he wouldn't just say, "This is how I would do it." He would find a way to make it natural for the person doing it, because a lot of people come in there and they're not comfortable. You stand in front of a group of your peers in a very unnatural setting, and you have to try to be as natural as possible, and it's not easy. And he found a way to put people at ease and to say, "You know what, try this, try that. What are your interests? What are your likes? What are your hobbies?" And just, he was able to bring that out of people, and nobody from the time he passed until we left could fill his shoes.
Yeah, that's something he was instrumental in my career too, very much so. You guys mentioned Bret Hart, and I know you're fans of Bret Hart. You got any feedback from him since you've come aboard here?
Oh yeah, it's crazy because you mentioned his name, and immediately I smile, which is it's kind of weird when I think about it. But every time I get a text from him, usually my wife is right beside me, and immediately his name will pop up, and his name in my phone is Bret fucking Hart. So immediately it pops up, I show my wife the text.
Look at this.
Whether he sends me a happy birthday text, or you know, whenever we finally got our release, they granted our release, he sent me this long, beautiful text, and it almost brought me to tears. But he told me how proud he was of us, and he said it's very hard to, in this business, to stand up for yourself, but you guys did, and you always stood for what you believed in, and I'm very proud of you that you did until the day you left. And that meant so much to me, and that was the moment that I knew we made the right decision, to leave. Whenever the king of standing up for himself, the guy who punched Vince in the face, takes time out of his day to text me and tell me how proud he is that we stood for ourselves.
It's always surreal, like, hearing from him, getting feedback, and I know Hall of Fame weekend, that weekend
right.
in New York. He was there like Sunday for the pay-per-view, and he called me and Dax over to his table and catering, and he had this idea for a spot he wanted us to do. And so we just sat there and just listened to him talk about ways they did it, him and Anvil, and how to make it work and how it has to be executed and all this. And just, he's like, I think it only fits for you guys to use it. I think no one else can pull it off. And we're like,
I'll stop, Brett.
What's your favorite Bret Hart match of all time? You got one?
I do, but okay. It's a controversial one because I think some people either love it or they hate it. There's mm-hmm. no one that says, it's okay.
Well, that's the beauty of wrestling.
Right? Yeah. But I love the 60-minute Iron Man match with Shawn. The storytelling and the physicality and, and two guys trying to, it was kind of like the matches we had with Alpha. Two guys and with us, two teams, trying to outwork each other and outdo each other. And there's some people who say, oh, that match is so boring. In my opinion, if you think that match is boring, that is your opinion, but my opinion is you're a fucking idiot.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have, I mean, there are times where they slow it down, but you have to. You can't go a million miles a minute for every match.
Especially a 60-minute match. You have to pace it.
But then you work these beautiful holds, and you get out of these beautiful holds, and that's the beauty of professional wrestling.
Right.
And they did, and they knew when to pick it up, and they knew when to drop it, and they knew when to lay in their lifters and their kicks and their forearms. And to me, that's my favorite match ever.
Yeah,
I mean, they just based off of like how I felt watching it as a fan, Tim and Austin, the I Quit match.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a beautiful match regardless, but that was a very influential time in my life as far as wrestling and what I wanted to do with my life.
Right.
And I was a huge Bret fan, I was a huge Austin fan, and I bit on everything they wanted me to bite on,
right.
And I fell for the switch and...
They manipulated the fans, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. It's the epitome of what wrestling psychology and storytelling is.
Yeah.
And I was along for the ride every step of the way. Like, I was invested in Bret, and then I started to have, like, this ill will towards him because of the way he was acting. And then by the end of that match, I was completely switched, just like they had wanted it.
Not me. I sent him a drawing of the... This was a few months later, but I sent him a drawing of the Hart Foundation. And I
said... How old were you?
Oh, I was... 97, so I was maybe 12, I guess.
Okay.
But I sent him this drawing of the Hart Foundation. On the top, I said, Bret, you're the only person who can bring Canada and America back together.
Oh.
Please do. And at the bottom, I said, but if you don't, I'll still love you.
Oh,
I'm sure you never got it. But...
Wow.
That's wonderful. That's
a great story. Your Twitter accounts are pretty great.
Oh, speaking of standing up for yourself.
Yeah. The way you deal with the trolls and the way you deal with each other. Talk about social media for us.
It's not Shivani-esque, though. It trolls. I don't know. Sometimes I'm conflicted. I'm like, do I give them the time of day?
Right.
Do I not give them the time of day? All they want is to be, to be noticed, which is kind of sad. But in the grand scheme of things, some days your testosterone and your ego sets in, and you're like, I want to show this fucking guy
exactly.
the deal.
Right.
Yeah.
And so sometimes we have to show him the deal.
Yeah, right. Like for me, it's, I entertain myself more than anything.
It pops me every time. It's like, oh, these motherfuckers.
And like you said, like sometimes they're doing it just for the attention, and sometimes like, I think people are just real fucking morons.
Yeah, right.
And so either way, depending on like my mood that day, if I'm feeling like real sarcastic, or if I've been driving for hours and I get home and I'm just like irritated, you know what? Let's do this. Let's have some fun. It cheers me up.
Right.
So for me, it like just calling people out or making them look as stupid as humanly possible is fun.
I mean, there's enough negativity on Twitter if you're going to get anything positive.
Yeah, and we talked about it before. Like if we were to only respond to the positive ones, then we look like we're just like
begging,
self-gratifying, and just go. Like, it's not about that for me. Like, I appreciate all the people that support us, but they're not the ones that need to be put in their place. It's them.
And, but some days I wonder, like, why? Why do you take time out of your day to tweet me or tweet whoever and tell me how much I suck or how short we are or how we're not body guys or whatever? Like, brother or sister, I'm sitting at home with my wife and my daughter who I am in love with. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a human being. I have a regular life too. Like, why do you, how are you so sad that you take time out of your day to at me and tell me how boring I am or whatever, you know what I mean? Like
it's just there's something missing in their life, and that's, they're trying to build that up, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, we all get it. I get that I'm too distracting. Like that's my shit.
Well, I go back to, I could tell you why people are like this, because they're, to me, there are two types of people in the world. But years ago, I got this really bad tweet from a troll, and it was really, really bad. And so I looked at his profile, and he had like these Bible verses.
Yeah.
His profile.
Oh my God.
Okay. And the light went off, and I said, "I just checked out your profile. Did Jesus know you're a piece of shit?" Okay. So, so that's what I'm saying. The people who are like that are pieces of shit.
Yeah. The ones I like, I don't know if you guys get this, but I think it's pretty common with women in wrestling, where it's like, "Hey, beautiful, are you single?" And then you go to their profile,
never,
and it
I've
says like,
that one.
"It says like wonderful husband and father," and it's like, "Does your wife know you're tweeting this right now?"
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And there's some people on there that just want to fuck around with you too. You
know, it's so fun. I mean, so fun, right? Sometimes you just want to poke the bear.
It's like the Team America thing. There's three types of people: pussies, dicks, and assholes.
Oh yeah. So, sometimes the pussies are dicks. Yeah. Sometimes the dicks are assholes.
Sometimes the asshole shit.
Okay. Dax, I wanted very briefly before we go to our next segment, I want to talk about your fractured jaw. Had to have the jaw wired.
That wasn't me. I had the torn bicep.
That's right.
After.
Yeah. You guys have all had kind of like, you had an elbow.
You had the fractured jaw?
I had the jaw.
Okay.
And then I came back and a month later he tore his bicep.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Wow.
It was a good 2017.
Right. Oh.
And you had your jaw wired shut for what, 8 weeks?
Yeah.
What'd you eat?
Ate nothing. Drink whatever I could get.
Yeah.
In the blender. So for the first little bit, I didn't have much of an appetite. Like the first week and a half or so, I just wasn't hungry. I don't know if it was like partial depression or anxiety or just, I don't know what it was.
There's something about not chewing that just kind of makes you not hungry.
I mean, if you think about it, go one day without licking your lips.
Mm.
Go one day without sticking your tongue out of your mouth. Like when your jaw's wired shut, it's this.
Right.
I didn't lick my lips for 8 weeks. And I would try to go out the first or second day.
I'm not the only one who wants to lick the lips right now, right?
Oh, I already have about 5 or 6
times. I did
times.
Immediately. I put my hand across
my head. I immediately was like, how much chapstick do I have in my bag right
so
now?
So, like, I woke up from, like, the surgery, and after I wake up, they tell me, you know, you got this, here's your pain medicine. We gave you bolt cutters in case you vomit so you don't choke to death.
Oh,
I'm like, you tell me that now? Like,
right. Well, they're not going to tell you that before.
Yeah.
They don't want to freak you out before you go under.
I didn't have an appetite, and I'd lost like 14, 15 pounds in a week. And then I just started trying to blend up whatever I could, and I Googled like a cookbook of somebody who had been injured, had their jaw wired shut, and they had written down like a blog of everything they had while they were out, like blended up pizza, blended up this, and how to like
make it taste good.
Yeah, how to make it like enjoyable. So that's what I ended up doing. I saved it, and I would go look at it, and I would put a couple slices of the pizza in the blender with some water and some tomato paste and blend it up and drink it right down. I tried a burger one time. Was not good.
No.
Sounds all gross.
I do not recommend blending up a burger and drinking it, pizza, all for it.
We're talking with FTR. We mentioned Twitter, and we have a lot of questions coming our way from Twitter to Dax and Cash.
This is AEW Unrestricted. We've got Dax and Cash here. Really awesome conversation so far. And I know that we've got a ton of questions from people on Twitter. I think this is my favorite list we've had so far, so let's just get going.
Go ahead.
Samurai P, if you could go back in time and wrestle a tag team from any era, what team would it be and why?
Hmm. You get that one a lot.
Yeah.
I'll let you. I'll try to calm myself down so I don't vary.
Oh, this is where it gets good. You were burying people in the hallway before.
I know, yeah.
So I think for me, it would be a mix. It'd be a toss-up, I guess, between the Rockers and the Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah.
Just because both of those teams could do incredible things. Both teams were incredible baby faces, so like, us being natural heels because we hate everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would mesh really well. If it was just a match to have a match, Midnight Express are always gonna be at the top of the list for me. But if we're gonna have like an actual money drawing program / match, it's gotta be, I think I'd go Rock and Roll.
Yeah, I think Dennis and Bobby are the greatest tag team of all time.
Yep.
And they are no one no one will give them credit because no one really understands. They're the catalyst for the tag team wrestling we get to see now. Before Dennis and Bobby, no one was doing the fun in and out tags and the quick tags and the double teams and things like that. Even though they were the baddest of bad guys, they were still doing these cool double teams, but then they would finish it off with something shitty. So you would say, oh God, those guys, they were so good, but why did they have to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And so they are the catalyst for what tag team wrestling is today.
Yeah.
So I think they're the greatest of all time. However, I think we would just go in there and all try to out-heal each other, and I don't think that would be entertaining.
No.
The obvious comparison between Arn and Tully, we get it, we've got it for the last 6.5 years, seven years. And I think that as a unit, as a working team, the only team that can come close to Arn and Tully working as a complete unit that were that good were Murdoch and Adonis. Those guys were only together for a year, but if they were together for us, you know, for a handful of years together, they would go down as the greatest team ever. But those two teams, Arn and Tully and Murdoch and Adonis, were so flawless together. Bobby and Dennis had these beautiful moves together, but as a unit, a working unit, those two are the greatest. Now, I guess to answer your question, God, relax, Dax.
Okay.
But to answer your question, I would say, yeah, probably Rock and Roll or Rockers, because we could tear the house down with them, keep the action up. But also, a 1985 or 86 Ricky Morton, I don't know if anybody was better than him.
Yeah, that's what I'm imagining.
So we could do some incredible stuff with
him. Right.
What year was the match we were talking about the other day on a podcast? Maybe 86, the Arn and Ole versus... Ricky and Robert?
Yep, it was July of 86.
That match is such a beautiful tag team wrestling match.
I mean, like...
And fantastic. Let me name them, too, because they never got over as much as Rock and Roll, but as an athletic tag team, I think they were better than Rock and Roll, and we could have done some great stuff with those guys, too.
You know, it's unfortunate because, I mean, I'm going to really date myself because a lot of the stuff was erased. And a lot of TV matches back then were just, you know, enhancement matches.
Yeah.
But you needed to watch Gene and Ole Anderson, too.
It's my dad's favorite.
Yeah. I mean, just incredible stuff. And it doesn't really live anywhere.
No.
You know, it's not.
You can still find some of it,
but you can't find as much of it as you can the Rock and Roll Express and the Midnight Express and the Fantastics. So that's unfortunate.
Yeah, my dad always tells me, that Gene and Ole were the best tag team he's ever seen. He said he was afraid of them as a kid. He was so scared of them.
Oh, yeah. I thought Dax was going to have a heart attack the other day. This isn't Gene and Ole, but he found a Midnight's match he had never seen. And it was like early Christmas for him.
Actually, you know, I haven't seen Ole in like 4 or 5 years, but, you know, his health is not too good now. And I would love, you know, to bring him to one of our shows. And then have you two put the boots to him.
Oh, okay, yeah,
great.
Yeah.
How about that,
motherfucker? Yeah.
Okay.
Does Jesus know you're a piece of shit?
Yes. Every Saturday when I go to confession. Okay, he's like, oh, man, again? I think you've answered this, but who's the most underrated tag team of the year in the past? Would it be Murdoch and Adonis?
Man, I don't know. That's tough. Only because, like I said, they only teamed for a year together. No. They teamed for 2 years together from Japan to New York. I think for the time that they were together, they were rated okay, pretty fairly. But I think the Fantastics are... I don't think people understand how good they actually were because they didn't get the mainstream attention that the Rockers got and the Rock and Roll Express got. So I'd say the Fantastics.
I'm going to agree. This isn't... You know, an old tag team by any means, but a tag team that I wish I could get more footage of, like more recently, would be Eminem. Mm-hmm. I think Joey Mercury's mind for tag team wrestling was, he taught us a lot early on, and his mind for tag team wrestling was unparalleled. And you can still go back and watch some of their stuff now, and it's unappreciated because they're so good at being like unlikable that you give all the credit to the opponent, not realizing like, who the actual architect of it is.
Well, that's part of wrestling, right? Like, you're just like, oh, these guys are so good. It's like, well, it's they made them look
when you're
real
too good at being a heel, then you're going to get overlooked a lot.
Arn told me one time, he said as a kid, he loved this babyface tag team, and he didn't know why he loved it. And then all of a sudden, the flip switched for him, and he realized, oh, it's Dick Slater and Bob Orton, mm-hmm. who they were working with, who was creating all the excitement. And that's with the Dallas stuff.
Yeah.
With the Alphas. At the first match we had with Dallas, Alphas, everyone praised them and how mm-hmm. great they were, and they are incredible. They are.
I mean, same.
Favorite.
Like before, I understood psychology. I'm like, these guys are so great. And then the more and more I watch wrestling, I'm like, oh.
And well, we had that match, and then we had one more match with those guys, and people were like, oh, okay, wait a second. And then we had a third match, and then the people were like, oh, okay.
Oh, no, it's actually these guys that are really good.
Yeah, and those
everyone
guys are
is,
good.
But it's like.
But we were the one creating, just like Arn said, creating the action.
Right.
And then it got to the point where, like, it was saying, oh, you know, Revival, they have great chemistry with everybody. We are the chemistry, brother.
Yeah.
We all know us.
I got it.
We all know us.
Okay, Bruce, it's a B2. B2 DeRoos on Twitter.
B2 DeRoos.
Yeah. Did you ever think a legend, Tully Blanchard, would be managing you guys?
I mean, it was a pipe dream for a long time. Like, we didn't think the path would ever cross.
Right.
Like, we had different ideas of what we would do if we could. But I don't know if, like, you ever put a whole lot of thought into it until there's a real chance of it happening.
Yeah. Right. I think, I just found this out yesterday, kind of. But I think Tully and I are a little bit alike.
Yeah.
In our attitudes.
Mm, I agree.
sometimes he'll talk to me like he's Tully from 85 still.
Mm-hmm.
Not that he's not great. He's incredible. But I mean, like, his attitude, the way he speaks, he talks like he's Tully from 85.
He's got mm-hmm. such an attitude.
And sometimes I'm like, hey, Tully, remember, hey, relax, brother. You're talking to me, you know? It's awesome to learn from him, and I'll tell you a quick story, and then I'll let you get to the next question.
No, please.
Just how we learned from him every single day. Is we had an interview, and it was about the gauntlet match that we had. And in WWE, you're taught to cut your promos and just be conversational and just speak well.
Right.
And so I was talking and putting over the gauntlet match and the tag teams, and you know just speaking and trying to be as entertaining as possible. But Tully grabs the mic and he starts talking about the gauntlet match. He puts over the gimmick of the gauntlet match. And the interviewer asks, well, are you guys going to be, do you have an advantage going in last? And Tully said, well, you know, to some people we may have an advantage, but when you get into it, only wrestlers know this, when you get into a groove, you start out cold, but then you get into a groove and your body warms up and then you get acclimated to the match.
Mm-hmm.
When we come in, we're going to be cold and these guys are going to be acclimated to the match. And right there, I'm like, oh my God. First of all, he put over the gimmick match.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Second of all, he put over the guys that we're working with. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And now if we beat them because they're warmed up,
mm-hmm.
we actually look like we did something.
Yeah,
and that one moment, I was like, oh, jeez.
Everybody's,
so
yeah. Everybody's only seeing it from our advantage
mm-hmm.
and not from the disadvantage of being cold and going in there against somebody who's like in the groove.
Right. He's actually texting me right now.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I told him, don't worry, we're putting you over.
Well, tell him I said what's up.
Yeah, tell him I'm so glad someone his age can still text.
Hey! Is that use technology? Are you as big of a fashionista as
Tully? Hell no. That, you know, look, Anna, you just asked that, and he says white pants, black shirt.
Oh my God, he came up to me, and he's like, I have a question. I'm a side story about Tully Blanchard, because he's my fucking favorite.
Yes.
He comes up to me, and he goes, hey, I got a question. And he just kind of stands there posing, mm-hmm. and he's got his shirt untucked. And I'm like, what are you asking about? He goes, tucked or untucked? And I'm like, you're fucking Tully Blanchard, not somebody's fun uncle. Tuck in your goddamn shirt, you're a professional. And he goes, well, okay. He walks away and I see him later and he does like a little twirl.
He's asking me what color should he wear for the pay-per-view, because we've got some special
gear. You gotta wear whites.
Yeah.
So. It's title match, you always right. gotta wear whites.
And it's the last weekend he can wear them.
Yeah. Right. Oh, Labor Day. Yeah.
Mm.
That's a good point.
Mike Flynn submitted a question on our YouTube channel, tntdrama.com/allelitewrestling/unrestrictedpodcast.
All right, Mike.
Cash, you said that you were a fat kid. What inspired you to start losing weight and focus on fitness?
Actually, Mike, that was nice. I was a scrawny kid.
Okay, so
see, we're not blaming you. We're blaming Mike Flynn.
Yeah, don't shoot him, Stone.
Mike Flynn, I will roundhouse you.
He must be he might be related to Jerry Flynn. He might roundhouse you. I was a very fat kid, almost 300 pounds fat.
What?
And I was just, I mean, growing up in North Carolina, all you do is get fried food. And that's the way my family would comfort us, is to cook for us. And then you had to eat all your food. And then when you ate all your food, they would come over and put more on the plate.
Yeah.
So I was a very, very, very fat kid. And
I was playing football, so I would eat even more. Mm-hmm. I was a lineman. And And so I got chop blocked, tore my ACL, went to have surgery, and I'd never stepped on the scale. And I stepped on the scale, ooh, and the guy said 287. And I was like, I'm almost 300 pounds at 5'10"?
Yeah.
Oh my God. And I knew I had to make a change there. And so and now I still like battle with body dysmorphia, mm-hmm, and like image problems.
He's terrified of carbs.
So I'm afraid of food, period, because I don't ever want to go back to that. And then, you know, this is disgusting, but you got all that like excess skin and all that stuff. And
got all the stretch marks and stuff. Right. Yeah.
You're so beautiful, brother.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank
you. All beautiful.
We're all beautiful. So I just wanted to have a better quality of life, but also I knew that if I wanted to make it in professional wrestling, I just had to work as hard as I could, even though I never would be a body guy because of the circumstances in front of me. I knew I had to be in some sort of shape. And that's why in the matches like Dallas, I would never, ever, ever let physical specimens like Jason Jordan and Chad Gable blow me up. I'll never let anybody blow me up. Nobody will ever be able to out-hustle me.
Yeah,
ask little Gagey's who was blown up in that match.
Yeah, he apologized to us. Well, I've never told this because he's my friend. He's my one of our best friends. But do you remember the spot where we went up for the power bomb hooking clothesline, but we didn't hit it?
Yep.
He was so blown he couldn't jump.
Really?
Cash had to power him up and then drop him down because he was so blown. So there you go, Gabe's. Keep working out, boy.
I could have held him up too, but I was afraid he would come down very high on his head.
Yeah. Right.
So we just sacrificed
it.
So
for him.
Oh, soft smart marks.
Oh shit.
Yeah. Finally, 4 years later, we get to tell the truth.
All right, this is from Caitlin Drew. You ready for this one?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Submitted on our TNT drama.com page. What is the most useless talent you have?
Oh.
Caitlin says that I can write backwards, like mirror writing. Thanks, Caitlin. We appreciate that.
That's spectacular. Mine is that I can do flips.
Not just fists?
No, he can do all the flips, but it's useless because I came up with the gimmick, so I wouldn't have to ever flip.
There you go.
I used to do flips all the time, and I made no money.
Now, there you go, right?
I make way more money.
Right.
So that's a pretty useless talent to have. Yeah. So take that, you fucking smart mark.
The most useless talent. Okay. Oh my gosh.
I'll do a back handspring right now if you guys want.
Man, I've never thought of that. I don't want to waste any more time.
Oh no, I got one.
Yeah.
I don't know if you do have one. I can stick quarters all the way up my nose.
Well, that's going to come out on one of these
that's
podcasts.
Impressive, though.
Oh, I've never noticed your nostrils.
They're massive. It's just my whole head is big, so it all looks proportional.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, but like, it's a fun trick. It's like, hey, you got like 2 quarters?
That works.
You can do it. And then I made 50 cents because nobody wants them back.
Yeah, no one's in bad. Nice. You're the world's best panhandler.
Yeah. Sorry, guys.
Unrestricted.
All my talents are useful.
All right. Lisa Lentz on our TNT drama.com YouTube page wants to know, what's your favorite song to sing in the show?
These are so great. These are so great.
Right now?
Wait, why are you laughing?
Just thinking about his favorite songs to sing. I don't know about in the shower, but I know karaoke.
Mine?
Yeah.
Karaoke?
And what are they?
Oh. He's thinking of Whitney Houston, I Want to Dance with Someone, which is one of my favorite songs
so
to sing.
Good.
But
so
I think
good.
Right now,
so sassy,
right
so
now,
good.
Right now it's Lady Gaga, right?
It's Lady Gaga. She's, and I hope my wife doesn't hear this, but she is so hot too. But I'm in love with my wife, so
you can
go.
Still respect people.
Yes.
We're all beautiful.
But that song, Rain On Me,
my
6-year-old daughter introduced me to that song, and now I can't stop singing it.
It's so good.
Yeah, wow. That's my favorite song to sing right now.
And I don't know, like, it just depends on my mood, and I'll just put on like a shuffle, and whatever plays, I'll just sing at the top of my lungs. I don't know if I have a favorite to sing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too hard to narrow down.
Do you have a genre that you prefer?
No.
Just anything?
Yeah, some days it's Pop Smoke, some days it's Garth Brooks. It's just
surprisingly, my favorite genre is country music.
I would not have guessed that.
Yeah,
never in a million years.
That's why those answers were kind of like, ooh, Lady Gaga and Whitney Houston. Wasn't Willie Nelson.
You sure you're from North Carolina, brother?
Yeah, man. Well, guys, thanks for your time, man.
This was so wonderful.
And it's so great having you here, man. I'm
it's great having you here.
Yeah. Well, thanks for all the kind things you've said about me, and I think you'll agree. We say this with every group we talk to and every person we talk to. It's so fun being here, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. It's a dream come true, honestly. Creativity is at an all-time high for me, and that's
Wrestling is my outlet. Wrestling is my mistress. I am infatuated with wrestling, and I love wrestling. And it's done so much for me as a kid. I've said this many times, but it has done so much for me as a kid. Our ultimate reason for leaving the WWE, as much as they did for us, and as much I was able to take care of my beautiful wife and my perfect daughter, wrestling did so good for me. I want to do good for it.
Yes.
And we were never going to be able to do good for wrestling if we stayed there. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like we've got the opportunity to capitalize on doing something good for wrestling.
Yeah. Right. As much as we'll joke about it, or we'll be as honest as we can when we're answering questions about our time there, I had no ill will towards WWE.
Sure.
Like, it did so much for us that I would never have been able to do otherwise.
Right.
Made great money, great friends, great mm-hmm. memories. Can't be mad about that.
Right.
But like you said, we knew that if we wanted to be fulfilled, like, creatively and enjoy doing what we love again, we had to leave. And coming here, man, it's just been a breath of fresh air. And I feel like we get to create, and I feel like the company is already overachieving so much.
Oh yeah.
And hopefully, like, we can get all these minds on board and steer it forward in a direction that's going to be prosperous for everybody, because everybody gets, like, ideas and everybody gets input. And that's what makes wrestling beautiful, is this guy knows what he does best.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what he does best. I know what I do best. You guys know what you do best. And if you're all playing to your strengths, at some point, it's just going to be unstoppable.
Yeah.
Good stuff, man.
This is so wonderful. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for your
guys.
Time.
We'll do it anytime.
Hell yeah.
You can see FTR on AEW Dynamite Wednesdays, 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 Central on TNT. By the way, you can subscribe to this podcast on TNTdrama.com/All Elite Wrestling/Unrestricted Podcast. That's the video version. But Aubrey, how can you get the audio version of this podcast?
You can subscribe wherever you get your podcast for free.
Woo!
We release new episodes every Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of awesome conversations. So definitely tune in, subscribe, rate, review, leave us your comments, questions. We love
you. Unless you're a troll, don't leave us shit.
Yeah, fuck you.
Come to us.
Okay, smart marks. Okay. So I'm Tony Schiavone.
I'm Aubrey Edwards.
Thanks for listening to AEW Unrestricted.